So we have videos that we made a couple years ago that are consistently getting a couple hundred views every single month, or even a, you know, a few thousand views every month, which is surprising because a lot of time with content online, with social media, you know, you'll see a spike of engagement and then it'll die really quickly. But these are questions that people are searching for over and over again. So we put in a little bit of effort up front and it actually is paying dividends for years afterwards.
Welcome to Your Wealth and Beyond, where Andrew Rafel, founder of Baintree Wealth Advisors, talks through all things financial understanding, personal growth, and more. Here, we inspire you to turn your dreams into actions because your financial journey should be just as exciting as your destination.
Welcome back to another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. I'm your host, Andrew Rafel, and today we have another live guest. I am pleased to introduce all the listeners, Brian Hayes. Brian Hayes is the owner of Rotiv, and Rotiv, what would we classify Rotiv as?
Well, we're a Salesforce consultancy. So we help small businesses implement Salesforce and other similar software so they can get more out of the tools.
And for those of the listeners that have used Salesforce, a lot of people have great things to say about it. A lot of people, Brian, as you know, they're like, this is so complicated. It's so difficult. We've been fortunate to be using Salesforce since 2010, and it is a grind. You know, the one thing with Salesforce,
sure. It
definitely is not a step in and it's ready to rock and roll. But we've been fortunate to be working with you now probably over, has it been almost 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, I think over 3 years now.
So it's been a game changer in utilizing someone who's got the expertise and understands businesses and especially ours and being able to help out in a lot of different ways. So today, listeners, we're going to take you on the journey from Brian as starting his company, you know, that entrepreneurial side is the Your Wealth and Beyond podcast is about helping the listeners build wealth and find purpose. Mm-hmm. But then I think the caveat today, and this is interesting for you, is we're all looking to how do we find our target clients, how you've really utilized YouTube as a way to position out your expertise within the Salesforce consultancy space and doing it by educating the viewer and providing a lot of good info and allowing them to see that you're the expert. And then we'll talk through on how that has transitioned to bringing on some good clients for you.
Sounds great.
Wonderful. So how long have you had Rotiv for?
So let's see. We really started it right at the beginning of the pandemic. So, you know, 3.5 years now, almost 4 years.
Okay. Wow. It seems like the pandemic could have been yesterday or 10 years ago. It's and I see you're wearing a Brophy shirt. Did you go to Brophy?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, John Jangle, one of our advisors, he's also a Brophy grad.
No, I didn't know that. I'll have to talk to him about it.
And starting Rotiv, was this your first foray into being an entrepreneur? Or prior to that, did you have any other experiences of building businesses?
So I've had a lot of different experiences, vast majority of them unsuccessful. So, you know, I've had some business in one way or another since, you know, middle school, where I was making drawings and, you know, selling them for a dollar or two, or making duct tape wallets and selling those to fellow students. But this has been the most successful business by far.
The duct tape wallet didn't hit
it
off.
It didn't take off. No. Hard to scale that one.
Yeah. Not too waterproof too in Arizona, huh?
Yeah.
But do you had that, just that entrepreneurial spirit from a young age? You just like saw a potential benefit that you could offer somebody and you're like, I'm going to go for it.
I've always had an interest in business and in entrepreneurship. And, I have made like-minded friends along the way. And, you know, it seems to be a pretty common story that it's just a series of different attempted businesses, learning something else along the way. And then eventually, you know, we kind of figure it out. So as long as you stay in the game long enough, I found, you know, eventually was able to hit on a business that actually works.
Yes, which is always important. And a lot of times with starting businesses, we hear a lot of them fail. It's trying different things, finding failure, being able to learn from failure,
sure,
and so forth, and hopefully failing when you don't have a lot of responsibility or kids or mortgages and things like that.
Yep.
So Salesforce, big behemoth, right? It is a an intricate world. They've created, you know, a subculture, a sub-ecosystem per
Absolutely.
Se. How long have you, you started the business 3-4 years ago, but prior to that, were you working for someone in the Salesforce realm, or how did you get the expertise that you bring to the table for your clients on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. So actually, in college was my first exposure to Salesforce. I had an internship. I was a business major, and I was working with a small company out of the Bay Area, and they didn't have any CRM system. So that's when I first learned about Salesforce, and I helped them, start using that. And then after that, a number of years later, I had a couple of sales positions and I ended up selling for Salesforce. I worked for their Pardot part of the org after that acquisition. So I was actually an account executive at Salesforce for a while before I eventually became a consultant.
So you were in that area, you were understanding on the selling side what the value prop was for the clients that you were going after, per se.
Absolutely.
But then you started seeing the inner workings of all the minutia that's involved with what Salesforce does and how it needs to, in a sense, be integrated for each business, because every business is not alike. And that's what I don't think a lot of people realize when they get into the Salesforce realm. They're like, wow, this is just too robust. And
sure,
I would assume most people aren't using it to the, maybe 30% of its capabilities.
Absolutely. And that, it applies to almost every software that a business uses, not just Salesforce. You just think about all the options that, Microsoft provides and all the functionality that you have in a tool like Excel. We all have access to this amazing technology, but there's just not enough people who really know how to use it. It's especially true in organizations. So from working at Salesforce, then I worked for a couple small companies and startups after that, I really got to see that firsthand. Like, we have all this great software, but very few companies are actually taking full advantage of it.
And what was the culture like working at Salesforce back when you did?
So it was very sales driven, which probably shouldn't be surprising considering the name. And it was good. It was an intense environment that was very focused on, monthly goals, monthly and quarterly goals. So as far as a sales culture goes, it's definitely the most professional one that I've ever been a part of, which makes sense because it's been a very successful company. And a big result, a big cause of that is the sales team that helps evangelize their products and helps companies understand, what's possible with them.
So when I get that call from our rep over there at the quarter end, which we get a lot, and it's quite a, you don't hear from them until that goal needs to be met. And, but that's interesting. It's part, we don't look at it down. It's just part of the deal. And a lot of times they've reached out and we have utilized something that, maybe they only reached out because they had to hit a threshold, hit a bonus, hit a goal, but that's all right.
But could also be your opportunity, right?
It's always an opportunity.
Have a stronger negotiating position. Yeah. But at least, for the most part, there is somebody over there that you can talk to help understand this huge field of technology to understand what might actually be applicable to your business.
And did you ever spend time at the Dreamforce that they hold each year?
Yeah. So I worked it 1 year as a salesperson, which was interesting. And then I was able to come back. So I wasn't working at Salesforce at the time, but my wife was. And so then I got to just be, a guest and see some of the different booths and that kind of thing.
Yep. And for listeners that don't know, the Dreamforce is the annual conference that basically takes over San Francisco?
Completely takes over San Francisco, yeah.
And it's I've never been, but it sounds like it's almost like a week of just all kinds of different vendors come in and different technologies, because a lot of the Substack of Salesforce is built on companies outside of Salesforce, right? That app exchange, that ecosystem, kind of like with Apple and their marketplace, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So it's, it basically takes over all of San Francisco. They bring in a cruise ship just for the hotel rooms because all the hotel rooms are taken up. And it's partly educational, it's partly promotional. There's booths, you can talk to salespeople about new products, that kind of thing. And then a lot of the restaurants nearby are taken over by people in the ecosystem. So independent companies that might have an integration with Salesforce, like, DocuSign or any other sort of integration, just like the App Store. Yeah.
And then I assume they've got very good entertainment. They pay top dollar for some bands.
Of course, yeah. And then there's the whole party component, too.
It's always, conferences are always built on that, And I'm sure that Salesforce is a lot of sales and individuals, a lot of fun there. Okay, so you start your business in, right around COVID, and you, and it doesn't matter what business you're in, how do I get my clients? Where do I get them? So before we talk about YouTube,
sure,
how did you start generating the right prospective clients that could utilize your expertise?
Yeah. So breaking in initially is tough. And with consulting companies like ours, it's getting the clients tends to be the hardest part, because the education to get trained up on the software is actually pretty accessible. And if you have time and you put in the effort, you can learn the tools. But getting the clients is the tricky part to make the businesses work. So initially, there was some cold outreach via LinkedIn and then also using my network. So one of my first clients, I was able to get in contact with a sales team at Salesforce through somebody I knew on the customer service team, just because we started at Salesforce on the same day. But he was an introduction that led me to some new account executives that I hadn't met before, and they needed partners for the companies that they were trying to sell to. But initially, I didn't have a track record. I didn't have relationships with any of these account executives. They were all, brand new to me. So initially, it was trying to make them an offer that would be valuable to the account executives. And it was offering a free automation, basically a little project that they could offer to one of their clients for free that I would do. And the real point there was to try to build that relationship with the account executive, which they were happy to do, because then they built their relationship with their prospect or their customer because they're getting them free services. And that eventually led to opportunities where I'd be brought in on deals for new Salesforce customers. And then I could start doing implementations for them, building up that track record and a base of customers.
Right. And were you focused on a niche when you started the business, or were you at, hey, I'll take anybody?
Open to anybody at the time. Really just looking for any sort of business, but focused on small businesses. Because when you're working with larger companies, there's so much more process involved. And when we're just starting out, didn't have a lot of exposure to that process, how they would want to see a scope of work, as an example. Mm-hmm. And also couldn't wait around on, net 60 or net 90 day terms to get paid.
Sure.
But small businesses are often a lot easier to work with. So that's where I focused.
Yeah. And I think I found you through search engine positioning. We were looking for Salesforce consultant, but, finding, and now it doesn't matter because you're not local, but finding somebody local, and I think you came up on the first page. So that's, one of the key components there in any business is having keywords and being able to have those that are looking for you able to find you on that first or second page.
Yeah, but that was pretty rare. So most of the deals came through those relationships with salespeople at Salesforce. But it's great when there's inbound, and that was something I was definitely looking to increase.
Yeah, that's and over the years, they've definitely have referred us out to partners that maybe had a different niche or expertise and so forth. So it sounds like that they're good at developing those type of relationships within Salesforce, finding the vendors and the firms that they can trust, they can do a good job, and then being able to branch that out so that the relationship that they have with their client, they're like, okay, if you told me this company's good, then we'll probably take that advice.
Absolutely. That's how it happens a lot. But it's really salesperson by salesperson. It depends who they like working with, who they have a strong relationship with, who they, have trust in, that have done a good job for their former clients.
Yep. And so you start slowly building the business. Employees over the years, have you had any, or how's that been?
Yeah, so we've gone back and forth with employees, which has been interesting. So I run the business with my wife, who's also a certified consultant for Salesforce. And so we've worked with full-time employees and contractors in the past, and we've kept it really small for now, but we're considering our options as far as expanding and bringing on more consultants to work with additional clients.
Yeah, it's that old adage, as we grow a business and it becomes successful, and then it's, do I have a lifestyle practice or do I want to grow?
Exactly.
And growing can have its own pains of, now I've got to manage people and are they doing their job and do I have the processes in place?
Right.
All the things.
Yeah.
And so it's just, as any business, as it actually starts succeeding, got to make that decision. And it's never an easy one.
No, that's the big debate for sure. Yeah. Keep it small, lifestyle, or like you said, expand and bring on more people.
So let's dig in a little bit of the YouTube side. So you start off getting through the relationships, getting the clients, being able to build trust and probably referrals from them. But now you start seeing the power of YouTube, which is the world's second largest search engine. Google number one.
Yep.
Google owns YouTube. So they basically are one and two. So let's walk through when you started thinking that you can provide the value and show some of the value in these education videos. And how did you start incorporating YouTube into your marketing funnel?
Yeah, well, the idea came up. It was really more than just content marketing, because there's all sorts of things you can do for content marketing, you know, blogging, podcasting, right? Videos, that sort of thing. So part of the thinking was, you know, how can we put effort into marketing that's also going to pay off in another way? And what I was seeing with a lot of the clients that I work with is they would have turnover in their marketing department or their sales department, and we do the same training over and over again, and it would be exactly the same. And so there really wasn't any value in having me or, you know, one of our employees or contractors do that training when we could just record it and provide it to them. And so we started just by recording all of our workshops together. And then that led to the idea, well, why don't we put in a little more effort and take some of the most common questions we have, the most common workshops or training sessions we do, record those, and then we can just send those to our clients, and they don't have to, you know, spend an hour or two of time with us. They can just review it on their own, and then we can spend more time on higher value tasks. And that naturally leads right into posting it on YouTube, and because there's a lot of marketing value there. If our clients are going to find value in these videos, certainly other people online would as well. And it's a good way to introduce them to our brand.
And the tech that you use, because a lot of people, oh, I want to create a YouTube video. Yeah. It has to be perfect. And I don't even know where to start. What is somebody, again, YouTube videos can be us talking like this, or mm-hmm. you showing your screen and walking through this tutorial with the screen and your face. What was the first step that you did to start creating these videos, and how do you get somebody off from thinking I want to do this to actually doing it?
Sure. So, I mean, the first thing is, if someone's asking you a question, if multiple people are asking you the same question, mm-hmm. then that's perfect for a video topic. And that's really the place to start. It's the idea. It's just far more important than, you know, the quality of the cameras and the light setup and all of that. So when we started, it was just, I had answered this question a few times. So I went ahead and used Loom to record a video, a screen capture, answering that question. And I think the first one, you know, didn't even have me in the picture. It was really just the screen. And then from there, you know, we got more sophisticated. And the next step was really about how do we dial in on different ideas and topics that we can use to post videos about that are going to help drive more traffic to us. And so we started with just, you know, research from our own clients. But then from there, we started looking at SEO. So what are the most searched questions around mm-hmm. Salesforce and Pardot is another product that we consult on. And then from there, was able to make a number of videos that were very specific, very short, answering those most asked questions.
Okay. And that's some great nuggets in there. So if we think about with Loom, and for those of you who don't know Loom, it's a great overlay technology that allows you to film a video, film a screen share in a very simplistic manner. Mm-hmm. And it can either be just the screen, it can be just a window or a tab, and mm-hmm. you can include yourself or not on it. So Loom is big. I think they just sold too for some ridiculous amount of money, but they definitely have grown up through the same thinking there, that there was a need to create mm-hmm. a simple software to be able to shoot video like that.
Yep.
So use Loom. And then with regards to this SEO, did you use like an SEM Rush or something like that to figure out the analytics of what's these topics and keywords and so forth?
Yeah. So there's plenty of tools like that. So SEM Rush is a good one. There's another tool that I can't remember the name right now, but it's all about the most common questions. Yeah. That people are asking. And then also just searching, if you go into incognito mode onto YouTube, so you're logged out, you can just search in the search bar in YouTube and it has autocomplete. You can mm-hmm. do the same thing in Google with autocomplete.
And so if it comes up as autocomplete, that means that it's a popular search term, and that's going to be like, you'll be able to identify there if it's Salesforce XYZ and something comes up, then you know that this is something that multiple people, thousands of people are searching for.
Exactly. Yeah. But the real benefit with this kind of strategy is it's actually the long tail. So I wasn't trying to answer the most popular questions. The one that is asked probably most often is, what is Salesforce? That general explanation. Right. But there's already a lot of videos on that.
And you don't necessarily want that client anyway. You want somebody who's already had Salesforce, they're dug in and they're invested.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you look down the long tail of all these questions, you get really specific with technical issues, then you're going to be the only answer. you know, or one of just a few answers. Mm-hmm. So it's much more likely that person searching for that answer is going to find, you know, your video or our video, and then they're going to get the answer that they want, which is building up that trust.
Right. So less volume listeners, less volume, but more eyes that are going to be targeted and niche for the specific person or business that you're looking for.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because we have a very small YouTube channel by YouTuber standards, but it does a great job for our business in terms of driving leads.
And so when you started posting videos, did you have a length that you thought was ideal? And did you modify that as time has gone on? And what would now be that ideal length? Or is there an ideal length?
Yeah. So the strategy was actually set by wife and partner in the business. And so she wanted these videos to be as short as possible and as specific as possible, just answering the question. So they were, you know, 2-3 minutes mm-hmm. long to answer that specific question initially. And that took some work on my side to try and, you know, cut back on things that I was saying to try and get it as value packed as possible. Because that's what people were looking for. Mm-hmm. They just want the answer so they can get on with their work day. Now, though, we've expanded. So we're trying different formats. And it's all still a big experiment. So some of them are an hour long now, where it's basically just a long training for sales users, as an example. Or we've recorded a lot of courses that we sell online, but we'll take whole chapters out of those courses and put them on YouTube for free. And that can end up being 45 minutes or an hour as well.
And then are you, well, with tracking and the analytics, mm-hmm. how have, as you started adding these videos and doing these testings and these pilots, what did you use or how did you judge success of what was working, what wasn't?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's the standard YouTube metrics that, of course, we look for when it comes to success. So who's watching the videos? The other thing that we're doing is we're tracking the video as a lead source for anybody that comes to our website. So if they come to our website and they want to work with us on a project, that's usually the biggest return on the videos. We can see what video they watched based on the link they click. So every link that's in the description of every video is different. And when they click through it, you know, through Pardot called Account Engagement Now, we can see which video it was. And so we're tracking that as well. So we can have a better understanding of what videos are driving people to work with us as services clients and which ones are driving sales of our courses.
So this was in the video description mm-hmm. that you would then put a little bit of keynote of what you talked about, but then you would have a call to action per se of here's yep. come to the website. And with that was a tracking ID. So you didn't necessarily know who they were, but mm-hmm. you knew which video they were coming from. And then could you watch what part of the site that they on your site, do you know what pages they went to at that point?
If they fill out a form, then yes. Yeah. So once they fill out a form, then we'll know, you know, who they are because they fill yep. in their information. And then we could see what parts of the website they saw. But it was really those links in the description. And yeah, we'd have a call to action that would say, you know, if this video was helpful, you might appreciate, you know, the longer course on the same topic. Just click that link.
Would you say that in the video or is that more so all on the description itself? Or would you have any calls to action at the end of each video?
Yeah. So we'd have quite a few calls to action at the end of each video. We're still playing with that now, though, too. And so initially, we would have an intro that would always be, you know, introducing myself, saying I'm a consultant with this company. We help small businesses. And then at the end, we'd have some sort of call to action, either watch another video or click the link in the description below to contact us. Now, though, we're backing off both of those and we're just focused on really the value that's in the video for our prospective clients. And it's less direct because we don't always have that call to action, but we're still finding we're getting traffic through those links and also through the link on our YouTube homepage, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And as you said earlier, it's, you know, the long play. Like when we look at, you know, the podcast, I think this may be like the 75th episode we'll have, you know, over the years, the podcast and someone's like, what's your return on investment on the podcast? Well, it's very hard to define that because the podcast or as we do more YouTube videos and so forth is that they may come from the website and then find the podcast and then find the YouTube video, or they may come from the podcast and go. So it's ultimately, it's somewhat difficult, for, at least from our side, to say what is the actual return.
Yeah.
But when it comes to some of the YouTube you're doing, because of you having the unique codes, it's a little bit easier for you to tell mm-hmm. that this one came from this video or this genre of videos, and now they became a client.
Yes, but it's still a bit of a black box. I mean, marketing attribution is always really challenging. So we do have some visibility, which is great. we can actually see that, you know, the clips of videos we took out of courses are converting to sales of those courses. But that really doesn't tell the whole story, because there's plenty of times that people have reached out to us and then I'll talk to them, you know, over Zoom or something, and they'll say, I watched a whole bunch of your videos, but that wasn't caught for whatever reason. They were on a different computer, or, you know, they didn't click one of the links. Instead, they Googled us instead, something like that. So it's definitely not perfect, but it is helpful to get a general idea of what's driving traffic and what's not.
What's nice about the videos, or when you do a podcast, is that they, you know, they watch 2, 3, 4 videos, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, what have you. They're getting a feel for who you are. It's almost like you're having your discovery meeting with them prior to them even coming to raise their hand to say they want to talk to you.
Yeah.
So they feel they get to know you, they see your expertise, and that is some of the power and the value of putting together these videos, the expertise that you already have. And then obviously the cost of it is really your time. Mm-hmm. Your time. And, you know, if you have some crazy fancy, you know, equipment, but, you know, that's where the real power is that it doesn't cost much. And then it's working for you in the background 365 days of the year.
Absolutely. And so part of having the emphasis on search engine optimization, so what are people actually searching for versus just trying to be more entertaining around Salesforce, really helps, I think, extend the life of all those videos. So we have videos that we made a couple years ago that are consistently getting a couple hundred views every single month, or even a few thousand views every month, which is surprising, because a lot of time with content online, with social media, you know, you'll see a spike of engagement and then it'll die really quickly. But these are questions that people are searching for over and over again. So we put in a little bit of effort up front and it actually is paying dividends for years afterwards. I think the other side of it too is these videos are useful for our current clients. So there's a lot of value there too. And I think it helps establish the relationship and helps us create more value for our current clients too, not just prospective ones.
And so your business model is, you, as a consultant, businesses hire you, there's certain projects or retainers, and then you go in as the Salesforce part of the administrator and go in and help them with projects, help with, you mentioned automation earlier. Yep. That's one of the key components and benefits of Salesforce. If done correctly, it can help automate the heck out of things. Obviously with the marketing and Pardot, or what is it now, account engagement, being able to use that correctly. So things can happen without us having, if we get a prospect in, where Brian's helped us is making sure that the lead gets entered in to Salesforce automatically through a flow. And then automatically after that, then they get part of a journey on an email side. So things that we had to do prior, where it's just like, well, did they get the email? Did they not get the email? Were they entered into Salesforce? That automation side is huge. So you go in there and you're project-based, retainer-based, but then you've also, you talked a little bit about the subscription base of the, you know, the in a sense, the workshops that, that you put together. So is that something new that you've added, and that you've added like a monthly subscription where they have access to your full array of videos?
So we've tried that before. So this is the other thing that's been interesting, is trying all the different ways to monetize the attention that we're getting on YouTube. Because we're getting over 50,000 views a month, which is fantastic for a small business. But we're trying to figure out, okay, well, we're creating a lot of value, but are we capturing any of that? And we've tried, so we've made a number of courses that are premium that you have to pay for. And we've tried the whole membership idea, where it's a flat fee and you get access to all the courses. But that hasn't really resonated too much. So just the straight cost for video course tends to work a little bit better for us. And even beyond that, it's a lot of people want the, you know, personal help with the context. So it's really driving services more than anything else.
Excellent. And then with the, you know, as those that get into the YouTube creation space and you now start modifying and tweaking descriptions and, you know, the calls to action, what are some tips that you've seen that works? Like, is it where you create the chapters and the, I know sometimes now YouTube does it, but having the chapters where somebody can jump to a specific part on the video itself. And have you played around with just what works on the description side? Like how many keywords on there or content? Or is it like, is that just trying to get too much in the minutia and it's almost impossible to know what the algorithm is utilizing to put you up in the top spot?
So when it comes to optimization like that, you know, we've chosen not to spend too much time testing some of those things, which isn't to say it's not valuable. It's extremely valuable. And there's lots of great creators out there who have run different experiments to, you know, kind of see what sort of thumbnails tend to perform better, what sort of descriptions tend to perform better. But because we have such a limited team, instead, what we're doing is we're just making the next video. Yeah. Because our list of topics and Salesforce questions, because it is complicated, is really long. And we figure we're going to do better by creating a new video that puts a new piece of value out there for somebody versus going back and trying to optimize and test on our older videos. That being said, there's a huge opportunity that we're not taking advantage of with that catalog. Right. I'm sure if we went back and, you know, worked with a thumbnail expert, we could get, you know, a significant improvement on those videos.
And that's a, do you do the crazy thumbnails with the colors and the different pictures? Yeah. Try some of those out?
We try a little bit of that. It's not too much like Mr. Beast, you know, that are can be pretty, you know, loud and colorful. Mm-hmm. So we're still trying to create a brand generally. So ultimately, you know, I want somebody to watch multiple videos and then associate that with our brand. So I know that we're missing out on some clicks as a result of that, because the thumbnail is so important on YouTube if you want someone to actually watch the video.
But you got to pick and choose your time. And right now we can either hire somebody or whatnot.
The
ideal amount of frequency of videos is, again, there's no set parameters, but have you guys gotten a cadence down that, hey, we need a goal of getting 2-3 videos out a week? Or what's that? What do you, how do you plan? Because this is a big piece of your marketing funnel.
Sure.
How are you planning on shooting the, you know, the time you need to shoot the video, the little bit of editing that probably goes into it? What's been a good cadence for you, or what could you recommend to the listener, to the viewer?
Yeah, so we've gone back and forth on this. The thing that's worked best for us is when we have an anchor show that we stick to a set schedule on. So we do this automation of the week every Tuesday. And that's where I'll walk through some sort of advanced automation. So this is really for more advanced users, administrators within Salesforce. And that we've been able to stick to pretty well, which is always tough, you know, when client needs get in the way, we all have, you know, a lot of things to take care of. But then around that, we'll do batched recordings. So here's a bunch of questions that we got from SEO research, and I'll record, you know, 5 of those videos in a row. Those are not so consistent. So that, you know, if I have some time, if we can fit it in the schedule, batch that. But the thing to be consistent with for us is that every Tuesday, get that one video out.
The more complex one. Thing.
Yeah, because otherwise it's so easy to have a couple weeks or a couple months go by, and then you realize you haven't published anything, which is what we don't want to have happen.
And with the subscribers that are, you know, continue coming onto the channel, you know, obviously started zero, but did you do any, is it more that for you was just organic and just allowing the algorithm to work? And, or did you do any marketing to try to get more subscribers in the beginning?
So it was all organic, you know, and part of that was, you know, the quality of the videos is really low in the beginning, and we want to keep the stakes really low. So just want to get practice of recording and publishing.
I don't want anybody to see this. Okay, we got 2 viewers.
Yeah, you know. I don't know that, you know, we're not going to spend any advertising dollars to drive traffic to these videos. But over time, because they were answering specific questions, that's what drove the views, and the growth has all been organic, which is great.
And then with the, you know, the way you can formulate your channel, have you dug into like having it set where you've got the, in your channel, like sub channels or playlists? Is that something that's been effective? Or so how does that tell a listener how to incorporate that? Like where the playlists come into play, or not just a playlist, but then is there a way to make it where they see this video? Is there a way to make sure that your next video comes up after that so that they continue in your ecosystem?
Yeah, absolutely. So the playlist, I mean, this is an easy one to build out a playlist every time you publish another video. And we've got them sorted into different categories. So, you know, there's 2 main softwares that we'll consult on, Salesforce being one, Account Engagement being the other. So those are 2 separate playlists. And then we've got one that is really focused on beginner Salesforce admins. And then we have another playlist that's all about those automations that are a bit more advanced. And it's broken up based off the different, you know, types of people in our audience. Some people just care about the marketing tools. Some people just care about Salesforce. Some people are beginners. Some people are more advanced. So they each have a playlist that they could then access if they like one of our videos.
And what about the YouTube ads? Have you dabbled in that at all?
No, not at all. But that would be really interesting to try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've dabbled in the past. We have, and, you know, we didn't have full systems and processes in place, but it's definitely a lot more cost effective than you know, YouTube or Google, you know, AdWords and things of that nature.
Okay.
So it might be something for you to look at if
absolutely,
you know, looking at the cost structure of that. And, you know, it is annoying when you go to someone's video and they have that ad that plays first, but because mm-hmm. you guys have the amount of subscribers you have, you're able to either turn that off, correct? Where you don't have to monetize that?
We could. That's true. Yeah. We have it turned on right now. Actually.
So are you monetizing? Are you getting, because of the amount of subscribers, you actually get paid? Mm-hmm. You get paid from that?
Yeah, we do. It's, you know, it's a small amount know, relative to our business, but it's nice because it does offset the costs.
Sure.
So as we're looking at, you know, how can we now reinvest into this? You know, it's definitely proven that the concept works. You know, we're going to be drawing from that revenue actually to grow it.
Okay. So you look at that as it's better to have that income coming in than to make it a maybe a little bit better user experience for somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I guess at this point, and I think it's because, and I'd be curious to know what your thoughts are on it, but I think people are so used to seeing ads playing mm-hmm. before YouTube videos that I don't know that there that many people click away from
right.
it.
Right. It's only expected. Usually the time 5 seconds and then you can click right through it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think from this, I don't not watch a video because of an ad plays. You know, you just
right.
like waiting for the thing to say skip ad. So do you utilize, you got the content you create, put it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Are you also utilizing Facebook to throw videos on there? Any Instagram? Are you cross-pollinating using some of the other social media sites?
No, and we aren't. And it's a bandwidth issue again. Yeah. So it's really looking at, we just have so many hours in the week and where do we want to focus all of our energy to get the most return?
Right.
I am tempted with LinkedIn though. Because all of our customers are on LinkedIn, they're in a business mindset. We've got a good number of, you know, followers, and I've got plenty of connections on LinkedIn. I feel like that would probably be the next channel that we'd want to mm-hmm. spend time on to help, you know, right. generate more leads and see how the videos do on that platform.
Yeah, I think that would definitely make much more sense than Facebook, which is not going to be your target client really. Any, or maybe your clients are on there, but they're not thinking about business and things like that. But LinkedIn, right. taking a couple of your core videos, just putting it on there, pretty simple probably to test that out and try it.
Yeah, definitely. There's just so much opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, so it comes down to what are we going to focus on? And what we've been focused on so far is, you know, let's see if we can make a valuable video that's short and specific, and can we produce it as quickly as possible?
Yeah.
So that's the other side of it is I'd love for us to do more graphics, you know, up the level of production a bit. But if it means that we're not going to be able to get a video out, it's going to take us 3 times longer to get right. that video out. Right now, we're putting that to the side. Right. Our priority is let's get this published because it's the answer to the question that I think is the most important part, at least on the videos we make.
It's obviously working, you know, and sometimes less is more.
Yeah.
And it's more important, like you said, to actually just get the content out. Mm-hmm. And listeners, it doesn't have to be perfect, especially as you're jumping in and starting the process of doing videos. If you look back to your first mm-hmm. videos, like you said, like most say, or most people who've done podcasts, it's like, oh my God, it's awful, you know, but it's good to, you know, that's come from somewhere. And every time you're going to get better and better and better.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, sort of the mantra of being 1% better.
Yeah.
You know, the Atomic Habits talks about that whole idea. So we're not going back and improving and optimizing our old videos, but every additional video we make, we do want to make that a little bit better in terms of production, in terms of scripting and everything.
So beyond your time, are there any other challenges that you've faced with getting these videos out and getting it right when people are looking at, is this going to be a good funnel for me?
So as far as challenges go, I mean, the biggest one is keeping the production efficient because they're and staying focused because there are so many other opportunities and so many things pulling at our attention and could potentially take our time. From improving the quality of the graphics or production is one of them. You know, posting to different social media platforms is another one. But we just got to keep coming back. And I need to, this is a good reminder for me too, because I've got, you know, 5 videos, you know, on my hard drive that should be published, but, you know, I'm trying to make them too good. That's the thing I got to keep coming back to.
Yeah.
It's stay focused on the value versus getting distracted by improving it too much or playing around a little too much.
And then, you know, as we look to great conversation here, I think the couple takeaways that we want the listeners to think about is just do it, right? Doesn't have to be perfect. But the key is, no matter what industry you're in, if you're getting a lot of questions from clients or prospects, know that that means that there's a lot of people asking those same questions. Mm-hmm. Dig in, do the research to see, you can use a lot of different softwares, but what are people searching for? Because right there alone could give you 30 videos. So continue looking to think about the mind of what the target you're going after. What are their problems? What can you solve for? And with that, you're going to be pumping out videos that are going to hit the importance for them. Not so much like, especially on we have so much technical expertise for you in Salesforce, us in the financial space. Mm-hmm. We think differently than what our potential client does.
Right.
And they don't want the complicated, they don't know for us, like what RMD, what does that mean? To us, that's just part of our language, right? But simplifying and being like, from that end, the government makes you take money out of your IRA accounts, the government plan, right, versus my required minimum distribution. And the same thing with you trying to, you know, your complex ones, obviously you got to get into the crux of it, but trying to be high level to your audience to do the video, the content that's going to resonate with the majority, and just know that they're the ones that research out there, they're telling you what they're looking for.
Absolutely. Yeah. And don't be afraid, I think, of getting really specific, even though it's going to shrink your audience, because those people have questions that aren't getting answered. And if you're the one person that's providing that answer, well, you're going to create value for somebody, get exposure. And that's the top of the funnel.
Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure getting to dig into not just your Salesforce background, starting your business, the intricacies of how you've used YouTube to be the main marketing funnel for you, but just the fact that, you know, you're throwing things out there and you know, providing good value. And a lot of those people will never become clients, but paying it forward, knowing that the 100 people that watch that video that day, maybe two of them might actually call you. And the other ones, they might forge on to somebody else, right? So it's working full circle. As we end today, any last advice that you'd give to somebody as they're looking at creating content and using YouTube as a marketing funnel? Any last things that we didn't hit today?
Yeah, I think it's definitely not too late. I think more and more people are using YouTube for research and as a search engine. And I would say start by keeping it really, really simple. And the important thing is to get the video up. You know, don't worry about editing, you know, get Loom or whatever the simple recording tool is, and then just publish the answer to that question. Because someone's looking for that answer, and they're going to be really grateful that they were able to find it.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to your continued success. And I've got a bunch of projects I got to get them working on right now. So we're going to have to end this podcast. No, but thanks for coming in. I know you just flew in for a couple of days here, not for the podcast, but we were able to get you in, snag you. And I think this was valuable, valuable content for the listeners. So continue doing what you're doing, and we wish you nothing but the best.
Thanks for having me on the show.
All right. And all the show notes from today will be below. If you want to get a hold of Brian, if you have questions, you'll be able to contact him and watch a lot of his videos and learn from not just on the Salesforce side, but just take away from the videos that he and his firm have created and just plug it into your marketing funnel and don't overthink it. And stay tuned for later this month for another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. Happy planning, everybody.
Thank you for joining me for today's episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. To get access to all the resources mentioned during today's podcast, please visit Baintree.com/podcast. And be sure to tune in later this month for another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond.
Investment advice is offered through Baintree Wealth Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuity products are offered separately through Baintree Planning Group, LLC. Baintree is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during this show shall constitute legal or tax advice. You should talk to a qualified professional before making any decisions about your personal situation.